and we're very pleased tonight to have Paul Huttner joining us. And Paul is the chief meteorologist for NPR. He's worked in radio and television in three cities, Minneapolis, Tucson, and Chicago. I guess he's the only anchor, and we'll have to ask you about this. It had to be quite an experience. The only anchor that showed up at WCCO during that Halloween blizzard in 1991, and that had to be something. He's also the author of Updraft, NPR's weather blog. Paul, welcome here to WTIP and the Roadhouse.
Hey, it's great to be here, Buck. Thank you. Good to be here. Good to see you, Bob, too. Thanks.
Nice to have you. Yeah, nice to have you aboard. Let's talk, since I brought it up, let's talk about that blizzard. How did you get in and nobody else could?
a really great little Honda Accord hatchback.
Wow.
Let's put it this way. You know, it was one of those deals, Buck, where we looked at the storm a day or two before, and we thought we could get heavy snow. And one of the models, the computer models, was suggesting maybe as much as 20 inches. And we all kind of looked at each other and went, that's not really going to happen, is it? So they're like, okay, I was the young buck, right, at the TV station. We got all these guys, Mike Fairborn and Bud Crayling and Bill Anderson and all these people. And they said, all right, Huttner, we didn't have a morning show at the time. Huttner, you go in the morning. We'll do a few cut-ins until the rest of the staff gets here, and we'll just kind of cover it that way. I'm like, okay, great. Be in by 6:30. So I the night before, we go home, and it was Halloween night, of course, and I remember trying to get the last of my leaves up because I thought maybe I won't see the ground again for quite a while. I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning. There's 15 inches of snow on the ground already. I went, oh, my goodness. And I remember backing out the driveway. I had to take three runs at it to get out, and I just pulled out and made it onto the street and started going forward down a small hill, and I knew no plows were out, 15 inches of snow on the ground, that if I ever stopped, that was it. That was where I was going to be. So I drove all the way down Highway 12, 394, right down into Minneapolis, buried it on a snowbank, and I got in, and there was myself and one of my news managers there, and we started doing cut-ins, and he said, Paul, I want you to pretend that we're the Weather Channel. I want you to go on the air, and I want you to stay on the air as long as you can. Well, I did, and nobody else could make it into the station, so I was on with Trish Van Pilsum, a reporter, just the two of us for 5 hours until somebody else made it, and it was just a crazy day.
That's an amazing amount of time for you to cover.
It was.
You know, just to keep going like that.
It was, but it was pure adrenaline.
Okay.
Yeah, it was fun. Big day.
Yeah, you know, I always compare tough jobs. I think about them as thinking that, you know, it's like a fishing guide.
Mm-hmm.
You're only as good as that day.
That's true.
Well, it's kind of the same with what you do.
It is.
When you're wrong, you're wrong.
Oh, and people remember it when you're wrong. You know, we may be right 9 times out of 10, which is about the average for the next tomorrow's forecast, but that one day you miss, you'll hear about it for a long time. And it's not a perfect science. I mean, the computer models are very good. They're not perfect. We can't model the entire atmosphere. We only measure a very small part of it. And so the physics isn't perfect in the models. So that there's always little errors on where the low pressure and high pressure systems are, what the pressure gradients are, where the rain or snow is going to be. And that's where our job gets really difficult. And in my opinion, interesting. That's why I love what I do.
Yes, a little bit of art in there. I read some of your blog, which we'll talk about, the Updraft blog, and right in there you say, you know, I kind of go by hunches sometimes.
I do. I mean, here's what it is, a real experience. I used to work with a bunch of ex-Air Force guys when I first cut my teeth in this career, and they were good forecasters, some better than some of the university-educated people I worked with. And they used to say, you know, Paul, a big part of this job is having seen it before. If you've seen it before, you can really react to what you're seeing on the weather maps and how that's going to turn out, how you think that's going to look. So I look at weather forecasting, and people ask me, you know, what does it take to be a good weather forecaster? And I say, the biggest part of it is, are you a good decision maker? Because every day you're looking at maybe 100 variables, you're boiling it down to 10, and then really down to 2 or 3 that are going to carry the day for the forecast. And if you can look at that set of facts and come up with the right answer, that's decision making, and that's what, and not be afraid that you're going to be wrong. That's what makes a good weather forecaster.
Do you ever wish that you lived in San Diego?
I love San Diego. I have visited there several times, but I would not want to work there as a meteorologist. And I worked in Tucson, Arizona for 9 years, and sunny and hot can get a little old. It's true. But you do find ways to find the finer points of the forecast and weather and really talk about those.
Well, this part of the U.S. has to be a tough area to work in as a meteorologist, because not only we have such a varied state, and Lake Superior is such a big influence.
Absolutely.
That it makes everything you do just that much more complicated. And now, something that we're going to talk about here a lot tonight, with the changes that have come from global warming or climate change, it has made your job just that much tougher.
The extremes seem to be coming more frequently. The weather changes more rapidly. And, you know, you're right about Minnesota. This is a great place to be a weather forecaster. I liken it to the World Series or the Super Bowl of weather. We get it all here. The weather changes frequently. It changes rapidly. It's good for business, as I like to say. It keeps us going. But it's challenging. It's never the same. And you're right. The geography of Minnesota is quite unique. We're in the center of the continent. We get air masses sweeping from all directions. Gulf of Mexico, humidity and heat. And then here comes a cold front, an air mass from central Canada colliding with that, where the temperatures may be 40, 50, 60 degrees different in just a matter of a day or two. So it all kind of meets right here in the middle of the continent, and that's where we live.
You know, maybe 20 years ago, we were hearing a lot about climate change, and we're talking at that time about the Arctic, maybe around the equator. It didn't really strike home here, but now, the last few years, it's no longer just something that happens somewhere else. It's happening right here.
Yeah, and you see the changes. We're all seeing that in our backyard now. The lakes in Minnesota are freezing later, 1 to 2 weeks later than they did, and thawing out a week or two earlier in the spring. Of course, this year was an extreme example of that. This March was just off the charts crazy. We set 15,000 weather records in the United States. We had the warmest March on record in Minnesota. In fact, in the Twin Cities area, it was the warmest month ever compared to average. It was 15.5 degrees above average in the Twin Cities for March. And of course, that was the same up here on the North Shore. I heard, talked to some folks over at the North House Folk School that told me that some people actually reported black flies up in this area in March, which
crazy?
Anybody who knows and has gone to the Boundary Waters has been up here knows that that's usually a late May, early June proposition this time of year. But things are changing. Things are happening earlier. The springs are getting earlier. The falls are getting later.
We had an ice fishing contest towards the end of March with canoes. There was
nice.
Open water where the fishing contest was being held. It's never, ever in my lifetime been that. So it's that kind of crazy weather.
Yes, and that's when you know things are changing. This isn't your grandpa's winter anymore up here. And you know, I'm so grateful of the recent rain that we've had in May. I know the fire danger was getting real high up in these parts. I love the North Shore. I love Grand Marais. We get here at least once a year. I'm a Boundary Waters veteran. I've probably made about a dozen trips or so. But I noticed, you know, the rivers were really low along the shore the last couple of years. And the North Shore just doesn't feel the same if those rivers aren't raging. And so pleased today to drive up past the Cross and the Temperance and see a nice flow and a nice roar going on the rivers.
And many of these changes, Paul, it's something that you're going to be talking about. By the way, Paul is the featured speaker down at North House Folk School's Boreal Birding and Northern Landscape Festival happening right now. And tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, you'll be at the North House. And part of the reason that you would be the featured speaker as a meteorologist is because of climate change. In fact, that is the reason. It also, as you just mentioned, affects our phenology up here big time. We now have raccoons. We have wood ticks that I didn't have when I was young. You know, there's so many things that maybe you can expound on that a little bit for us.
Well, you know, the great thing about it is you're the people that kind of tip us off to this as the phenology reports come in. They're confirmation of what we thought would happen with climate change, and we're seeing it happen very rapidly. The amount of evidence of climate change is mounting year by year. And it's really, as you said, Buck, it's a great way to say it. It's no longer sort of a theoretical proposition. We're seeing it. It's happening in our lifetime. So that's what I'm going to talk about tomorrow night. You know, Minnesota's changing climate. Is this the new normal? Are these the things that we're seeing in the last few years? Is this going to be the new normal for Minnesota? And from the way things look, it looks like more often than not, that'll be the case. One of the things people maybe don't think about with climate change, it doesn't mean it's never going to get cold again. We're always going to have winter. We're still going to have 20 below. But it's just going to happen less frequent, and it's probably not going to last as long. Doesn't mean we won't have a severe winter, but, you know, we haven't had a below average month in the United States since 1985. Think about that for a minute. We haven't had a sub-average month in basically half the people's lifetime.
Almost 30 years.
Any month. Throughout the year.
Not one month in the United States below average, and globally.
We had a map that I'm sure you've seen that's been out there on the internet and on different media from 2011 that showed all the record highs. You've seen that?
Sure, yes.
And it's just like, lights everywhere shining because there are record highs everywhere.
March, again, was incredible because if you look at a temperature graph of the average temperatures for March, and then you look at the record temperatures above that, well, March tracked right along those records. Duluth, International Falls, the Twin Cities, everywhere in the state of Minnesota pretty much had temperatures close to records and set multiple records in March. That's one month, but that kind of thing is happening so frequently now in terms of the amount of records being set. And 2011, you're right, was the year of extreme weather. We had $14 billion weather disasters in the United States last year, 14 individual weather disasters that cost $1 billion in damages. That's never happened before. And it wasn't even a particularly active hurricane season for the United States. So things are changing. Storms seem to be getting more extreme. You know, it's like a puzzle where all the pieces are coming together. When we get the last piece, it's probably going to be too late in terms of the climate system already being loaded with the greenhouse gases. And then you're really going to see the big picture of what we've been talking about now for a couple of decades.
You know, we're talking about record highs, but it seems as though it's the winters that are changing the most. And the lows are no longer what they were, at least in this part of Minnesota.
You're absolutely right, and that's astute observation. If you look at the new data set, the new 30-year averages, every 10 years, the National Weather Service reloads the 30-year averages for locations around Minnesota and everywhere. And the new 30-year averages for Minnesota that just came in the last year here showed about a 4-degree increase in winter, especially at night. In many areas. So the wintertime, nighttime lows are the biggest, most dramatic warming. The summers aren't getting much hotter in Minnesota, but the winters are much, much milder than they used to be.
What's the hardest thing to forecast in the winter?
Where the rain snow line will be.
Okay.
And a lot of people don't understand that a snowstorm's coming in, and you know there's a big storm. You're going to get that right. There's going to be wind. There's going to be precipitation. The question is, where is that critical 32-degree isotherm going to set up? And a shift of 30, 40, sometimes even 20 miles in that will mean the difference between all rain and little or no snow accumulation and potentially 6 to 12 inches of snow or more. That's snowstorms are one of the hardest things to forecast. That, and I would say hurricanes and the monsoon in the desert southwest, some of the toughest forecasts a meteorologist has to make.
I would agree with snow. It, you know, whenever it's predicted, we kind of, maybe, you know, because you really don't know. And I understand, I always thought when I was young, of course, everybody, the snow is that high and blah, 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 you know. But
you were only that tall.
Well, that's part of it. But actually, the biggest part of it, it seems, might have something to do with the amount of snow that melts between snowstorms now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we do. We're getting more frequent melting. When we were kids, all of us, I won't say when that was. It was a little while ago. There was more permanent snow cover over the winter months in the state of Minnesota. And now we're getting these long thaws in between that gives us a chance to melt. And it's kind of a feedback loop, as we call it. In the winter, it's dramatic. the temperature difference between snow cover and no snow cover. Even in the same air mass, it'll be often at least 10 degrees warmer without snow cover, because the sun hits that brown ground, it heats the ground in the lower atmosphere much more quickly and efficiently, absorbs up to 80% of that sunlight, while when it's a fresh snow cover, it reflects up to 90% of that sunlight before it has a chance to warm the atmosphere. So it makes a huge difference in temperatures.
We're speaking with Paul Huttner, and Paul is a featured speaker at North House Folk School's Boreal Birding and Northern Landscapes Festival. He'll be the speaker at 7:30 tomorrow night. Paul, of course, is also the chief meteorologist for NPR. I think one thing folks don't realize, a lot of people that come up here don't live here, is the changes in Lake Superior and how they hold warmth.
Yeah, and you know, interesting, because Jay Austin, who's a big Lake Superior researcher at the University of Minnesota Duluth, he's done a lot of studies. A lot of folks have done studies recently that Lake Superior now has as much as 71% less ice cover over an average winter than it used to have back in the 70s. So that has a lot of effects. The lake temperatures get warmer quicker in the spring because there's less ice in the winter. That means more evaporation, so lake levels can drop. And it also can mean more wave action and shoreline erosion. Oddly enough, it also can mean more lake effect snow, because if you get cold air masses coming over that relatively warmer water and it's ice free, you'll generate those lake effect snow squalls. Whereas if that lake is iced over, that shuts that moisture source off. So it mm-hmm. does have dramatic changes.
Yeah, it's a big effect, of course, on our weather here. Do you think that this accelerating weird weather patterns are going to ever settle down into more of a predictable pattern?
That's a great question, and I don't know the answer. I think that might be, we're in uncharted territory a little bit here. My short-term inclination is to think that the extremes will continue to be more extreme, and that we'll continue to break more records and have wild swings between drought and flood. I mean, we've gone from drought to flood in about a month here in most of Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was theorized when folks started talking about climate change back in the 80s and the 90s, and people were saying, you know, more weather extremes. Well, that seems to be panning out.
I know one thing that's been a discussion here in Grand Marais is the flow of water coming down to town, the water from rains. What do we do with it? How can we adjust so that it's used effectively? Mm-hmm. And I think that's true in all communities that are facing these kinds of. What do you know about that, as far as planning is concerned?
Well, you know, Dr. Mark Seeley, with the University of Minnesota, who's a colleague of mine, also at Minnesota Public Radio. They've documented an increase, a threefold increase in these heavy rain events. In fact, there was another study that just came out within the last month that says that 3-inch rain events in Minnesota used to happen on average about every 7 years. They now happen about every 3 years. So the frequency of these heavy precipitation events is increasing. As a result, we're getting more runoff. The atmosphere is loaded with more water vapor. The dew points are rising in Minnesota. We set a record dew point, 88 degrees at Moorhead last summer. And so all that contributes to these more intense rainstorms. I think that trend will continue. So as far as planners go, you need to plan for maybe these more frequent extreme rainfall events, and perhaps even spells of drought in between, instead of the nice sort of steady regular rains, which were never totally regular, but they seem to be getting heavier and more frequent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that stormwater systems have to be redone in many places, I assume.
Well, they do, and in fact, that is one of the things in the Twin Cities with these more frequent rainstorms. The stormwater systems were built in the 30s, 40s, and 50s to handle that volume of runoff, and now the runoff is much greater.
Hmm. There's a question that I have to ask you, because Bob and I joke about it every week when we read the weather, which we get off the National Weather Service. Is that written?
You read my mind.
By a computer? That is the craziest
thing.
The
hazardous. Who decides what's a hazardous weather outlook is?
The products, that's a great question. It sounds like it's written by a computer sometimes, doesn't it? The products that the Weather Service puts out, there's a variety of generation sources. A lot of the hazardous weather outlook or discussions from the local weather service or the storm prediction center, those are written by people, but they kind of use some tech speak, and they'll use abbreviations that are
excuse me, I'm sorry to interrupt, but
no, please.
Are they looking at less severe weather and calling it hazardous weather? Because Buck and I, we go through that. Our listeners are tired of us going on about it.
But like today, about this, yeah.
For tomorrow, there's a 20% chance of thunderstorms, and we've got a hazardous weather outlook.
Okay, hazardous weather outlook. That's easy for me to say fast. is just a routine product that they'll issue, and they'll talk about what are the potential weather hazards for tomorrow. Storm Prediction Center is really more where you want to look to get the answers about severe weather on any given day. They do these things called convective outlooks every day. What are the chances for thunderstorms? They'll literally create a circle on a map or an area where they expect thunderstorms. And then if it's stronger, they'll put a slight, moderate, or high risk of severe storms for any given day. So they kind of look at that. If you learn how to read those and decode them a little bit, that's really kind of where you want to look. And then Hazardous Weather Outlook is another product.
I think we're going to look at Paul's site from now on.
Right.
I know a couple of the other things that we laugh about is sometimes it'll say, you know, winds out of the south at zero.
Right.
Or it'll say, you know, winds 10 to 15 out of the south, gusting up to 15.
Right.
That's why we're accusing a computer writing that thing.
Some of those are computer generated. You're right. I think, and I should talk to my friends at the Weather Service about this. They'll come up with a forecast, and then the computer reads off kind of a grid what the forecast is. So some of the verbiage and the wordage, and it has like a menu of words to choose from. I think many of those point forecasts, if you click on them, are computer generated. So that's why you get some of those funky words.
I'm relieved it's not a person.
No. Yeah. If it is, they're fired.
Actually, we've got a question from a listener.
Oh, good. Great.
And I don't know if it's, what is the growth on the rocks underwater near shore out about 10 feet? Is it algae? And is that early this year?
You know, that I'm not an underwater expert, but I've spent enough time in Minnesota to know that it probably is algae or some kind of underwater, you know, moss or something like that. And one of the things I have read is that, you know, Superior is still pretty cold. I just talked to some of the fisher folk down there that said it's 37 degrees about 5 miles off of shore. It's in the 40s in the harbor in Grand Marais. But that the algae blooms may become more frequent in Superior as the water temperatures warm up. And this is a year where, Jay Austin has cited that he expects Superior to be warmer this year earlier. In fact, one of the benefits may be Superior may become a whole lot more swimmable in the next few years.
I read that it might be a swimming year for Lake Superior, and I'm sad to hear that. Because eventually, and I suppose maybe we should reiterate, or you could, just how the heat is held in the lake more so than the air as that changes.
It is true. Water holds heat much better than air does as a medium. So that's why when you live near an ocean, like say a cold current around California or San Diego, even in the middle of the hot summer near the coast, it's colder. I lived in Chicago for 4 years, and Lake Michigan is the same way in the summer. You'll get the cooler, just as you will here in Lake Superior. So the water changes more slowly than the air does. So if and as Lake Superior continues to warm, you know, you can expect that falls will get milder in general, and that springs may start a little earlier up here, and that lake breeze won't be so cutting. The thing about Superior is, though, it is so deep. There is so much cold water under the surface, and you guys know this up here. If you have a south wind for several days in the summer, the water will warm up because it blows the surface water. Well, if that wind bangs over and shifts into the northwest and is strong, the upwelling, it pushes that warm surface water away out into the lake, and then the water from deep has to upwell underneath near this shore, and the water temperatures will drop rapidly. So there's enough cold water in Lake Superior that I don't think we're talking about Miami anytime soon.
Well, I'm relieved about that because, you know, I didn't want all our fish to have to change too.
Right.
Or opossums just show up in our backyard now.
Yeah, the boa constrictors.
Or boa constrictors, yeah, or anything like that, yeah. Well, weather is always, as you mentioned, always a big topic in Minnesota, and climate change now is a big topic all over the world, not just here. So one last question.
Sure.
Is there still things people can do? And I'm assuming yes, but I'm going to ask that question. How far along do you feel climate change has gone, and is it something that we can still have hope about?
Absolutely. I mean, and you know, all weather is local is a saying. Maybe all climate change is local to a degree. You know, people talk about a carbon footprint. You know, what are you doing in your daily life with your carbon footprint? How small can you make it? One of the things I'm happy about is being in this business. It's nice they set me up at home, my weather lab, with a little digital studio. So my commuting footprint is very low. I'll go down to Minnesota Public Radio maybe one day a week, but that's nice. I'm not commuting. You know, do what you can on the local level not to contribute those greenhouse gases. And then I guess do what you can actively beyond that. But I think it's really going to be more, Buck, a case of adaption, because the system's already loaded, and that may continue for the next few years and decades here.
Yeah, so be prepared for more of the same.
Be prepared.
Only accelerating.
Prepared to adapt.
Yes.
That's it.
We've been speaking with Paul Huttner, and Paul, of course, is the featured speaker at North House Folk School's Boreal Birding and Northern Landscapes Festival. He's going to be speaking tomorrow night at 7 o'clock down at North House Folk School. He is also the chief meteorologist for NPR and author of Updraft, NPR's weather blog. And where can people find that, Paul?
Yeah, go to Minnesota Public Radio website, and Updraft is under our blogs page. If you also just want to Google Updraft, it'll pop right up for you. And I want to hear from people on the North Shore on the Gunflint Trail. If you want to comment on my blog, water temperatures, any kind of phenology up here, any local weather reports, I love that stuff. I will get it on the air. I will get it on the blog. And I want to thank you, Buck and Bob. I love this radio station, WTIP. I believe in what you guys do, community radio. And I'm just honored and pleased that you invited me here today.
Great. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paul.